Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Elise Parsley, illustrator, author, and for today, keeper of the magic word. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 288 of the podcast with Elise Parsley, illustrator of The Magic Word, written by Mac Barnett. I am a little obsessed with the way Elise draws characters, and I'm not afraid to say it. Specifically, how much expression she draws on the mouths of her characters. Have you ever known a kid who talks expressively in just the way he or she wraps his mouth around a word? Because I have. I have known plenty of those kids, and to see them in Elise's stories is really something that brings her characters to life. Elise was on an episode of Picture Booking a couple months back to talk about her Magnolia books, which we touch on here as well. I'll link to that episode in the show notes because it makes for a great companion to this conversation, in my opinion. Enjoy! Here's episode number 288 of the podcast with Elise Parsley. Welcome to the podcast, Elise Parsley. I've waited a long time. I'm glad we're finally talking.
Oh, I'm so glad too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for just the way you keep popping up in my life. I mean, I mentioned to you an email before we talked, but the fact that we had met, I don't know if you'd introduced yourself over email or Twitter or something, but whatever it was, we had met like via social media, and then very shortly after, you were at the National Book Festival.
Yeah.
I think at Kale's, right? Wasn't it Kale Atkinson's presentation? I feel like that's where it was.
I think that was it too. Mm-hmm.
But it was just, I haven't forgotten that. It was really special to run into you and to have that moment of surprise and also, oh my word, you're that person that has that book.
Well, I'm pretty sure I was the one thing saying, you're that person who has that podcast. Oh. I mean, I think I've listened to your podcast more than you read my book, I can guarantee.
Well, fair enough. I do. I would have to read your book a lot on repeat to be able to. Because I talk a lot on this podcast, at least.
Well, thank goodness. I mean, we need you to get us through these big projects.
It blows my mind that people, but I think it's because I'm coming from a job where I need to focus so much on mm-hmm. on developing stuff that I don't come from the artist place of, I hear from people like you. I mean, a lot of my library people, we listen like on the commute or while we're reshelving books. That's how we listen to podcasts. But as far as otherwise, to hear that like people such as yourself are inking or coloring and you're working on that, that's just, it's cool. I mean, it makes me feel like I get to be in that way, and the guests that we have on get to be in that way, sort of part of your subconscious and locked in to while you're making that art. And that's that to me, I don't take for granted. how magical it is to know that we're being, that I am being invited in to those times. So thank you. That's cool for me.
Thank you. I feel like I get like a new studio mate, like every time I, you know, tune in and listen, and
that's cool.
It really is great. And it's amazing how often just the right person, I'm listening to just the right person at just the right time, you know, where I'm frustrated with a drawing and then I'll hear someone on the podcast talk about how they had to redraw this one part of their book over and over again. And it's so good to remember, like, oh yeah, we all do this. All of us are doing this. And I feel like you guys, you're always good company, and whoever you have on always is, lends themselves to my work in just the right way. It's awesome.
Well, to pair with that, I love too that all the different guests that I get to speak through throughout a week or month, it's always neat to have, I had whatever kind of day at school with, you know, because you, as a librarian, I teach the same lesson each day for, like, I see, like, a different fifth grade class each day. Mm-hmm. So sure. I teach the same lesson, I'm refining and I'm working and whatever. So there's differences in how the kids are, but similarities in how the lesson goes. Well, anyway, to have different guests on such as yourself and to have it be just the right moment, like, it's just cool. I know that whatever we talk about today will be in some way influenced by, like, unspoken influenced by the day I had and the kids I saw and the way we interacted. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So we, now I have to remember that other people are listening, but I feel like this is a great group hug moment, Elise. I'm glad.
Bring it in.
Pat, there you go. Well, anyway, thank you for sharing with me so long ago. If you ever want to bring an alligator to school. Oh, I know why we connected. Okay, why? So if you ever want to bring an alligator to school, don't. I found out about you because of Steve Malk. I talked to Steve, and Steve was like, well, the news story had come out because you sold, you, okay, just refresh for the eye. You've talked about this publicly before, but you, like, signed with him and sold books within a ridiculously short amount of time, given what the, like, industry, if you will, industry quote-unquote standard is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I think I signed with Steve, like, I kind of on Tuesday, and then by the weekend, he had found me a deal made of pure gold, so, yeah, he did. He worked his agent magic, really, is what happened. So I just kind of was able to get his attention, and then he just did what he always does.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was wild. It was a great kickoff to this career.
Yeah, those beautiful moments. Right person, mm-hmm. right time, right book. Those are beautiful moments. So since then, so I've followed then, because I remember that if you ever want to bring an alligator to school, don't, was then, like, I don't know what they refer to it as, but it was like a Barnes & Noble feature book. Because I remember going in and they had it on their display, which I've then gotten to see. I've been watching for that now, so I've seen some other friends that have been up there. And knowing, as a librarian, the importance of the reach you have when your book is facing out, that exposure that you get. So it's just, it's been neat, Elise, to see all these things line up for you. And well, yeah, but where I was going to go with that is, that you have the right book there, that things line up, and then you have the right book to connect with people. So it's not like, I don't know, there's a resonance there that it just, you know, you can just hear the bell ringing out all through the ripples of just the right timing, the right book, the right everything. So it's awesome. The only thing I need to ask you about now is, how are school visits going? Because that's the other part of the ripple that I don't get to see.
My goodness, they're so fun. And I mean, I haven't done a zillion of them, but, like, last spring I had a bunch, and they were so fun, because, especially because I live in a part of the country where there aren't a lot of school visits going on, honestly. And there aren't a terrible lot of illustrators and authors living in South Dakota, unfortunately. I would encourage everyone to consider, however, buying a vacation home here in South Dakota. It's cost of living is really low. So everyone come. But so I got to do a few this last year, and it was It was a blast. I mean, I get to do drawings in front of the kids and having them, you know, discover what I'm drawing as I'm drawing it and having them do that big, oh, that they do. Like, yeah. That's just such a treat. And the kindergartners in the front row, they're the best. Like, those are the kids who are gasping and they're laughing really hard and they're trying to warn me what's going to happen next. You know, they're so fun. It's been awesome. And then telling them about the other books that are coming out, just giving them a sneak peek.
Yes.
They go nuts. It's super fun. It makes me excited to go home and work on the books.
Going to say, doesn't it? You've been with your, I don't know what other, I mean, if we talk like business terms, it's almost like that's your clientele. You're making a book for them. Mm-hmm. You spend time not workshopping, but you do, there is stuff when you're with children and you're writing for them, or as I do, planning lessons and writing curriculum for them, that you just listen a different way. You catch on to different things, and you're right. Then that pitchfork is tuned right to the right way that you just want to go home and create and just let it all be influenced and come out. That's cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I have their little faces fresh in my mind, and I know how excited they are when they hear the title of the next book, and I'm like, okay, this has to be good. You know,
you're that right. Selling the kid was title. Excited.
Yep.
So you've got like, all right, kids. So my next book coming out is called If You Ever Ate a Zucchini in the Park, and they just, it doesn't hit. And you're like, okay, I gotta workshop that.
Yeah, maybe workshop that.
Workshop that, yeah. Oh, I never even thought about
are
things that you, yeah.
I try to be sneaky. I actually tell them part of the title, and then I make them guess the other part of the title. And I always kind of figure as a backup, like, boy, if the real thing, if someone had a better idea in the audience, I could just run with that.
Right?
But I always try to make them guess part of it, and they always have so many good ideas. Like, there's books that I wish I would have written based on the ideas that kids throw out during that time. And I write them down. I totally write them down when I get home.
But again, I have to come back to, in that creative process, you are writing them in some way, because those memories, they're there, even if you're not thinking about them, right? Even if they're not in your active memory, they're still there. They're still influencing, even if it's like the expressions on the character's face or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love it. Ah, okay, wait. You're with kids, and your new book with Mac that we're here to talk about because it's coming out so soon, The Magic Word, is all about, I was like withholding the title because I was like, if I give away the title, then that's another one of those fun things. But it's all about saying the magic word, and how perfect when you're in school to have, I mean, I'm picturing you and Mac, like when each of you are in front of children, whether it's over Skype or in front of book festivals or author visits, just even that opportunity, as I will as a librarian, holding the book going, okay, I'm about to read this, so tell me, what's the magic word?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And every kid knows it, even if no one ever told them. It's like built into them from day one. They know the magic word. So right. I'm pumped for them to find out that there's another magic word out there.
I was just going to say, so let's talk about this. So Mac wrote this book. Do you want to book talk it? You should. It's your book.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
I'll jump in, you know.
Yes, feel free to fill in and if I, you know, leave anything out. Because I am just the illustrator on this one. I'm not
just
actually
the illustrator. Stop.
Not
it.
Actually also, the author.
Also, don't leave out the walruses.
Oh gosh. Okay, I'll try to work them
That's
in.
That's the one thing don't work out. Don't leave out.
Okay, here's my book talk. Here I go. So I would say this book, The Magic Word, starts off with a basic desire. We've all been there. The basic desire of wanting a cookie. And this kid, Paxton, he wants a cookie. He asks his babysitter for a cookie, and he's met with a typical grown-up response. She says, well, what's the magic word? And because Paxton is a little bit of a smart aleck, he responds by making up a magic word. And it turns out this magic word is really magic. And so I'm sure you can imagine all the things that you would do if you found a magic word, but one of the very first things that happens after Paxton gets his cookie is that he sends this babysitter packing. He sends a bunch of walruses after her. So and chaos goes on from there. So pretty soon Paxton has sent away a number of people, including his own parents and his friend, and kind of learns what it's like to have unlimited wishes, but no friends. So
it's in such a perfect way to tie it into children now, or children probably ever. It's, to me, the comparison is, it's the story of King Midas and the golden touch, right? The, what do you do when you have that power and you don't know when to stop? You can end up, you know, wishing yourself into a corner.
Yeah.
And I should point out, and I think you're doing this deliberately, and so therefore I'm going to do this deliberately. I don't want to say the magic word, because when I was reading it, there was something magic to actually hearing the word. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, it's going to be an in for kids that if they've read this book, they'll know the magic word. And if they haven't, they won't. And in that way, it's like, what's the culture that talks about your true name, that you don't tell people your true name, or else they, you know, have like access to your soul.
Right. They have like power over you. Yeah. Right. I can't remember.
But I feel like it's that same.
I know what you mean, though.
But the power that you have by letting this just be your magic word that you know, I just think is really cool. Well, I like that. But first off, I should say in your illustrations that it's cool to see you illustrating someone else's book. Is this your first time doing that?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there's something I missed. I didn't think so. But, well, awesome that it's with Mac Barnett.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know. It's nuts. I was a little intimidating. I'm like, could we not have given me maybe more of a softball? Just, you know, but I mean, it was a pleasure. I would also say that, you know, he makes your job easy. Like he, you know, makes such a fun text that you can't help but have a great time illustrating it. So, you know, that was a delight. So.
Well, where I was leading with that is that I like that your character design fits so well into Magnolia and her friends. It, to me, feels like there's this universe, the universe of Elise Parsley, that we're seeing all of these things that happen. And I love that. Because, again, bringing it as I am apt to do because of today being such a busy teaching day and seeing the diversity of kids that I saw, I just keep thinking, like, what are all the secret lives that my children have that, like, when they're not coming to the library, when it's their turn to bring in show and tell, what are they bringing in? Or when they're at home with a babysitter and she tells them to use the magic word, what's going on that I don't know about? It just is sort of a fun world to live in. And I think that this manuscript, I think that your art lends itself really well to it. I love all of the... but I think this is your style. But I love all of the fun that you have with facial expressions and animal facial expressions and all facial expressions. You do it really well. Do you have a background in cartooning, or is this, you just found this style? Like, is it from something you read as a kid? I don't know what it is, but you've got a really cool style. I like it.
I feel like I've heard this before, that somebody said that all of us are influenced to some degree by Charles Schulz.
Got it.
And,
okay.
You know, maybe that's where the giant circle head and rectangle body come from.
Oh, circle head.
It's also just something that I found I could replicate over and over, which is important when you're illustrating. Yeah. And it leaves plenty of room for expression. When you have a head that big, you know, how do you not fill it up with them?
That's
great
hilarious.
Expression.
The whole, and in my brain, the whole direction I was going is the mouth.
Yeah.
I zero in on the mouths of your characters. I think it's just ever since seeing Magnolia in that first alligator book and just being like, I've never seen in a children's book someone show a kid contorting their face that way, but that's a real face. So
I feel like maybe when I was little, I remember getting made fun of. People would tell me I had a big mouth. And they were talking about me talking too much, like, because I didn't talk too much. I was really shy when I was young. But they, kids were like, you have a big mouth. And I just remember that, like, you know, it's mean. Kids are mean, right?
Yeah,
so, but now, look, I'm turning that into gold.
I'll show them.
All the cool people have big mouths now.
So. Oh, my. Well, keep the big mouth thing going. That's hilarious. Maybe one of your students that you see will be like, when I was a child, I also had a big mouth and was made fun of it. And then I read Elise Parsley's book and I connected with the main character.
Yes, that's right. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for the big mouth kid.
Okay, so in addition to big mouths that are fun to focus on, I like you. Whenever your characters are like mouth gaping, you've got this thing that looks like either a whale or a cave. And both of those things to me, just they feel like, maybe it's because of this, that they feel like Pinocchio, or they feel like cartoons that I grew up with and loved. And so I'm going to keep going back to that. But the other thing I wanted to say, which is something I've seen now across three of your books, which I really like, is your, I feel like you're a really good set designer.
Ooh.
In the way that, like, I know when I watch shows and when things really work well in a set, that I have to remember that every piece of that set was placed there intentionally. Even like the way the alarm clock is sitting, or whatever scattered about on the floor, or the way that whatever is positioned is all intentional. And looking at your picture books, I realize that I'm drawn to a lot of the whatever the word is, like the ephemera that you have lying around. And that's a choice that you've made, that you've, uh-huh, you've put that in there.
Yeah, well, gosh, thank you. yeah, no, I really feel like that's, you know, it's details like that that tell you a lot about that person, too. You know, like, what do people keep around them, you know? And even though, like, all of his games and junk that Paxton has all over the floor, like, a lot of that isn't in the book. Like, it's definitely not in the text, you know, but it's... tells you a little bit about this kid and what he does with his spare time and how he plays with his toys. And, you know, it's fun to add those things in and kind of learn about the character as you're drawing their life.
Yeah. That it's not just in the character design. I'm trying to be careful with how I word it. It's not just in the character design and you figuring out who is this character? Who is Paxton? What does he look like? How does he face himself out to the audience, to the world, but also what does his world look like? And by his world, I mean literally like the space that he inhabits. When Paxton walks through a room, what's mm-hmm. the evidence that he's walked through the room?
Yes, yes. Or what has this poor babysitter been putting up with for the last 2 or 3 hours, you know? And same with Magnolia, like... you can look at just Magnolia, but then when you see all the other stuff going on, you know what this poor teacher has been dealing with all day. So, you know, it kind of gives you insight into, it gives you some empathy for the adults in the story.
Yeah, I love that because it's, we see, the scene starts off with the babysitter just like laying there on the couch reading a magazine. But at the same time, there's enough mess there that it had to have been a rough night. There's... Yeah. Or Paxton's exactly. really fast at getting into stuff, which also is a thing.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I love that one of my favorite details in the beginning there is that, like, off in the closet or off in the hallway, you've got some of the stuffed animals, like, tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Bound together. And I love that. And because of carrying it over into other things that happen in the story, I love that one of the characters is an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing with, like, your illustrations. Yeah. I see the details in your illustration, and it feels like a Graham Bass book. It feels like you're hiding something here from me. You're trying to tell me something. And that's great because I think that's at least, it must be all kids, but that's how my readers read. They study the book. They want, when the book is in their hands, not me reading it aloud, when it's in their hands, they get to control the pace. And so a book like this with details like this, there's a chance where they want to go back and inspect and see what clues are there. They want to see what other kids aren't seeing.
Exactly. Well, and that's who I'm drawing those little details for, those kids. Because, you know, there are those kids who go back and they study, you know, they know everything. And then there are adults who don't catch it. And those kids love telling the adults, you know, what they missed out on. So.
Right. Were you one of those kids? Are you a detail person?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was definitely one of those kids who looked at the pictures in picture books more than I read them. So I definitely, you know, I know that there are I actually am not a huge reader myself. Don't tell anybody, but but the pictures in picture books, I would look at them over and over and over. Didn't even need to read the story. I got the gist, and then I just needed to see the pictures a whole bunch more.
Have you always been, I like this, at least you're my people. Have you always been not really a reader?
Yes.
For me, it was as soon as I could read independently, I was reading picture books, and I responded really well too. I remember in like first or second grade, we had like a contest to see who could read the most books. And I'm pretty sure I was reading out of the contest, which is great because it did help my reading. That's great. And the exposure that helped my reading, that's great. But as soon as I could really read independently, my parents just stopped reading with me, and I never transitioned into like chapter books or middle grade or just nothing until I was required to read in high school. And then I ended up finding things that I started to like. And then in college, I decided to go English major and then teaching. And then like books brought me back, but I went for a long time. And even now, because I'm such a slow reader, I'm always like asking my friends if the book is a real, like if it's a sure bet or not, or I just give it like 50 pages. And then if it doesn't connect with me, I let it go.
Yep, I hear you. That's totally me. I think, especially once books stopped being read to me, I feel like part of the magic died with that. Like, I was like, oh, I have to read by myself quietly. And, like, it's a totally different experience than when you're reading with someone and you're doing it out loud and you're interacting. And, I think that picture books is kind of where I left off. And that's probably part of why I love them so much. Still, is that, you know, that was probably where I loved books the most. And I mean, I do read now, but boy, it takes me a long time. You know, I've been reading, my husband and I have been reading Uncle Tom's Cabin together, and I'm pretty sure we started it last August, like an August ago. So we're working on it. But
my wife and I read aloud children's books together, and we last read, I think the last one we finished was Rami Nightingale, Katie Camilla's new book. But even then, it takes us so long because it's that, and I have that weird thing of she loves being read to, which works out really well for me, because if I'm not the one reading, I have an incredibly hard time paying attention.
Yeah,
if she was
like
reading,
me.
I'd have a really hard time. I don't know what that is, but I can listen to audiobooks, but I think I listen to audiobooks while I'm driving. So I think maybe it's that, probably this might be a full circle thing. Probably that's why listening to podcasts for you artist types works so well, because it actually, I concentrate really well on driving. I think because maybe I can hear the story because it's competing for my attention.
Sure.
Whatever it is, there's like a competition. If I'm just solely focusing on someone reading to me, I can't do it. I can't.
Well, isn't that why like kindergartners have coloring and story time a lot of time at the same time?
Good call.
Because, you know, you got to do something. You can't just sit there and be expected to, you know, behave well and listen. You need to be doing something.
Right?
So, yeah. No, I hear you.
Don't allow ourselves that the same way when we become adults.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, whenever we have staff meetings, and teachers are the worst at staff meetings. If only the children could know. Maybe it's because we don't have those like fidgets or things to help us concentrate. That's funny. Anyway, yay! Glad to know that. Glad to know that you and I are the same, though. That helps me a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you find yourself reading a lot of you just had a baby, so you're going to be reading a lot of picture books again.
Yes. Yes.
But outside of that, do you find yourself being a person that it helps you to be reading a lot of picture books and it inspires you or what have you? Or are you a person that when you're working on a book, it helps you to not look at picture books?
No, I do. I try to read them right along. Because, I mean, part of it is that I want to keep up on what's happening. You know, if I didn't read while I was working on a picture book, then there's not very many times during the year where I wouldn't. You know, I'm always working on a picture book. So I just try, if there's something very similar to mine, I probably stay away from that. Like, I don't think I read a lot of alligator books while I was working on an alligator book, you know. But in general, I haven't read any Laura Numeroff books.
Oh, I was going to say, like, Laura Numeroff.
Probably in, like, 4 years, because everybody compares her books to my book, and of course I don't think they're anything alike, but you know, just in case, I just don't read her books because I don't need that kind of influence right now. So well, I just focus on my own voice. So,
it's
otherwise
so easy. I was just saying, it's just so easy to draw the comparison because of using the words if and then.
Exactly. Yeah, and there aren't a lot of second person, you know,
right,
narration books. So I think that's just, yeah, the easy comparison. So, which, you know.
But that makes sense. That's easy enough to avoid. That's easy enough to step away from.
Exactly. And there's so many other good books. Like, how could I not be reading them? And it's so good visually to see, like, how are people resolving things visually? Like, that to me.
There you go. Okay.
Super important to just, I mean, I actually, like, have little, like, those little sticky note flags. Yeah. Sticking out of a lot of my picture books, just like here's a spread that blew my mind. Like I would never have thought to visually show action this way, or to show, you know, or just to remind me, like pan out once in a while, or zoom in, or give us this different, you know, perspective. It's just I have marked my favorite spreads in different books, and so I do study visually. Like what other artists are doing too, because they're working with the same rules that I have. You know, they have to make it work on the same, you know, like they get their page size and then that's it for the whole book. So they have to work on that. They have to work on page turns. Like we're kind of doing the same thing. So
yeah.
So I try to study that.
That's awesome. Your picture book collection has things marked in it because of reference. That's awesome. Of course it does. I've never heard that before, but of course it does.
Yes.
Wow.
Of course, yes.
Do you, wait, so I feel like, and just correct me, I feel like when you were sharing the other stories, you were mostly saying like, you try not to read books that have like stories that are similar to yours, but does that go along with illustration as well? I feel like your style is different than most of what I'm reading, but mm-hmm. maybe there are things that you try not to be influenced by it. Does it work the same for illustration?
Well, I mean, part of it is I know, like, the artists that I admire the most, I could never replicate their style. I, you know, it would be ridiculous for me to try. So I feel like I'm free there. Like, it's not as, I'm not worried that I'm going to accidentally make artwork that looks like David Small because,
oh,
we all know that's not possible.
Your styles are totally different, yeah.
Yeah, but I can look and see how he, you know, composes a page, you know, and I can learn a lot from that, or I can be reminded like, oh yeah, like he really varies his line work, you know, and look how beautiful that line is, you know, so, I should make sure I'm loosening up more in my line work, or, you know, things like that.
So this is then, if I can just be like an art observer, this is then why when I read through the magic word, why you've got so many different perspectives shown, right? The way I can always say it is, like you're placing the camera in different places. There's times when you're panning back and times when you're closer to the character, or showing us like when we see, at one point we see Paxton's new room after all of these wishes. Mm-hmm. It's just like nicely framed from wall to wall. Mm-hmm. But the way that you are laying out those pages from the front of the book to the back of the book, I notice that you've got like a rhythm that you're varying. It's not like, you spend half the book really close up on Paxton and then all of a sudden we go way far back and see the big picture of everything. Mm-hmm. You sort of, I feel like as we're reading it, but this also parallels really well with the storytelling. I'm interrupting myself. Sorry. You do this thing where it's like, okay, look close. Now take a step back and look, it's getting bigger. Now look close again. Let's take a step back. Look, it's getting even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be deliberate. You're an artist. You're doing this deliberately.
I try to make it look like I'm not trying so hard, but I really do try hard.
No, so. It's good. It's effective. It's really good.
Oh, thank you. Shucks.
I think that it's what makes it work. I mean, I think when you're reading it, there's this thing that... I feel like there's this thing that if you go to like SCBWI conferences, mm-hmm. and you hear artists ask this all the time, or authors ask this all the time, like, but how did you make it work? But how did you do it? Mm-hmm. Because when a book works smoothly like this, it feels effortless.
Mm.
But I know from talking to enough people that it's those kind of books that have often the most amount of effort put into them in order to make it. You've asked the questions, Elise. You've asked the questions of yourself and of the art, and your art director and whomever else you've worked with have asked those right questions to be able to show us the story the right way that will make it flow.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think that's that was definitely an area of weakness for me for a really long time. I still think I, you know, have things, obviously, have much to learn. But I remember in college, especially, my teachers being like, you know, hard on me for not having thought through the composition enough. You know, like, is this the best way you could have showed us this emotion? Like, could you have framed this differently? Could you have, you know, cropped it in differently? Oh. You know, and so I feel like I can hear my professors, like, talk, you know, in the back of my mind, I hear them, like, reminding me, like, are you really thinking through, is this the best way to show this image? Like, if you're showing an expression, like, then why not zoom in a little bit and give us that expression? But if you really need to show us how far Paxton's house has gone out of control, then we need to see the house, you know. We don't need to see Paxton as much. And, you know, and remembering that, you know, your point of view matters so much and, you know, so I just, yeah, I feel like that's, you know, it's the area where I felt like I was constantly failing for all those years, that I feel like that's a huge, like, I really, really think through that as carefully as I can when I work now.
That's good. Do you keep up with any of those professors? Like, have they seen your books now?
Oh my gosh. Yes. It was the best to actually email them and tell them, because I just remember being so excited. And actually, I saw one of my professors, like, 3 months before I got my book. I remember feeling kind of sheepish because I had graduated like a year and a half earlier and was, you know, working on my own at home. Like, I was like writing and illustrating and wasn't getting paid for it at all. And that night I was teaching piano lessons to, you know, actually make money. And I remember seeing him and like hiding, and, you know, because I knew I didn't have like good, exciting news to share with him. You know, I wasn't like, hey, I just wasn't actually doing what I wanted to do yet. So I kind of avoided him. But then, like, 3 months later, I got a book deal, and it was such a thrill to email him and tell him, you know, that had happened, and to thank him for getting me there. Yeah. So, yeah, I keep up with several of my professors, and they've been so supportive. They're great.
That's awesome. Where did you go to school?
I went to Minnesota State University in Moorhead, Minnesota, right next to Fargo, North Dakota.
So you're close-ish then. So you can run into them. Yeah, it's not like it's halfway across the country. And
great.
But yeah, I like that. Hey, let me ask you, while our time is wrapping up, what else you have in the pipe? Because you have at least one more story with Magnolia, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a super fun summer with Magnolia's second adventure, where she took a piano to the beach, and that did not go well either.
Not so much. No. So nice to know that you know piano, you play piano, you teach piano. Nice to know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yep. That was, I miss it. I miss my piano students. And actually, when I first got this manuscript for The Magic Word, I remember telling my husband, like, I teach this kid. I teach Paxton, like, on Tuesdays. So I know who he is. And he does look a little bit like that student. I did intentionally design him a little bit based on him. But anyway, so Magnolia brought a piano to the beach. Didn't go well. But she has a third adventure in the works. It won't be out until May, I don't think. But and this third one, I always tell kids that it's happening at the library, and they always get excited and they always look over at their librarian. So then I have them guess what she brings to the library, and they usually guess a bunch of animals.
Okay.
And sometimes, I mean, it's really absurd things like a tuba and stuff. And I wish I would have written a book with a tuba.
I would have gone something. Yeah. Trying to guess through, like, okay, you've done animal, you've done an instrument, what else could it be? But are you gonna share? Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead and guess first.
What would a child be allowed to bring? I couldn't say like a chainsaw, but what would be
threatening? But you're not the first to have guessed if you did say chainsaw. People have guessed that before.
You know why? Because I keep thinking, like, okay, library, typically quiet. I'm a librarian, I know that it's not quiet. We love when it's noisy, but that makes for an interesting twist.
Sure.
Chainsaw super loud. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of a loud thing. I'm going to guess a tool. I'm going to guess like a jackhammer.
Ooh, no, but that's a good, it's a terrible idea actually, but which is what makes
it'll
be
a terrible idea. Yeah.
But no, she does not bring a jackhammer. She actually brings a whole circus.
No. So how does she manage that? I can't wait. This is great.
It's gonna be fun. She's Magnolia. She's gonna find a way. So
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So that's coming out in the spring. And and the magic word comes out in like a month or less than a month.
It'll come out when the episode comes out. We'll do it right along with it. I loved in Piano how they were like, the family was packing up for the beach. I just have to bring this up because I love it. Mm-hmm. Packing up for the beach. And there's just that one scene where she's like, I have it here. I should just open it up because I have it here. Where, let me find it. Okay, good. I was waiting for my stack of things on my desk in here to just all fall over.
Oh, dear.
If you roll out the piano anyway, this is mom. If you roll the piano, here, wait, I should go to the beginning. if your mom says to get ready to play at the beach, she means with a boat or frisbee or a shovel. She is not talking about the piano. If you roll out the piano anyway, she'll tell you you better not lose it. And you tell her it's okay. And then she just brings it anyway. But the idea, come on, that a mom would be like, okay, piano, fine, but just don't lose it. Elise, that's hilarious.
But don't moms say that, come right? On, isn't that a mom it. Thing?
Yeah, like it's on you. This is on
right.
you.
And it happens especially if you bring something. I always ask kids, I'm like, does your mom ever say this? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, what if you bring something expensive?
Oh, yeah.
Or fancy. And then they're like, oh, yeah, she does.
And then the connection you have with the kids, that universal, what if you get tired and mom is carrying the thing, and then when you feel rested, you will push again.
yep, exactly.
That's awesome. Yes. Well, cool. One of the things that I really love that all of my students miss out on, but I own copies of your books. One of the things I really love about both Piano and Alligator is that whatever they did on the cover, the treatment they did on the jacket, there's like texture. You can feel the sand and you can feel the chalkboard, whatever that is, that like wax or whatever they do on it. There's treatments like that are just little details that make it, you know, just make it special.
Oh, they're so fun. Yeah. And you know, you can feel Magnolia's teeth on the alligator one,
yes,
right?
Like, yes.
That's my favorite. Like, you could reach your hand into her mouth and feel her teeth. And then kids are always excited that they can touch the bird poop on the piano.
The bird
book.
I was just going to say the bird poop.
So, yeah, I'm going for the easy laughs. It's okay.
Do you do that? Is that something that you do?
No,
like,
definitely
you suggest,
not.
Are you whatever? They just, they do.
No, they asked me when the first book was coming out, they're like, we're going to send you a cover with these treatments. Tell us what you think, if you like them or not. And I was like, if I like them or not, of course I like them.
And then they were like, by the way, we are making you your own font.
Oh, yeah. That was so fun. That was
awesome.
So exciting.
Is the font like, I talked to somebody else who does fonts. Lori Keller does fonts. Lori Keller makes fonts for Arnie the Donut books. Probably lots of you make fonts. I'm fascinated by that. Is there like, do you all, I know it takes a lot of work to make fonts and probably the publishers own them, but is it ever like a thing that we can get fonts that you make?
Oh gosh, I don't know. That would be
a thing.
A good question, because that would be fun to own like a font that was someone's handwriting.
Yeah, like I think about like me doing like Kidlit, presentations at conferences, like to have I know you do this by hand, but even like the crazy colored things that are yelled in your Magnolia books, don't that looks so frenetic and energy filled, and I would use that so much.
I'll have to ask. That would be fun and if it's accessible somehow, because I mean, it sure is fun to have it, like, and have it be so easy. I think, you know, the only reason I think it happened was because when I did my dummy books, I'm not a designer, and picking out a font, like, scared me, because designers will just make fun of you mercilessly if you pick the wrong font. So finally, I was like, I'll just write the words in, because there's only 400 of them, and it's easier. So I just wrote it in, and then they wanted to keep it. You know, they were like, that, you know, it obviously matches your line quality.
Yeah.
So let's turn it into a font. And I was like, you can do that? So
wait, so Elise, I have a brilliant idea, and you and I can pair up and do this together. Nobody listening, nobody take this. Elise and I are doing this. Okay, let's go to Little Brown, and we've got time. You said May, right? May it comes out?
Yep.
Your marketing window is like about to open up. Let's talk to Little Brown and be like, listen, when we send this book out, instead of sending a bookmark or a little something, a little sticker or something, let's send them the font. Come on.
Oh, That would be amazing. A free download of McP, the font.
There has never been, not that I know of, there has never been a little press kit thingy with like a, here's a code to download the font.
That would be amazing. That would be. Come on. Okay.
We'll talk to Little Brown.
Done.
Nobody take that. Elise and I are totally doing that.
That's right.
All right, Elise, this has been a total blast. I don't want to let you go. I've had so much fun.
Oh.
Thank you. This is
gosh, been great. Thank you.
And hey, Magic Word is going to come out, and the Magic Word is great. You and Mac together, you made a good pair. His story is hilarious. I don't want to say the Magic Word, but I do. I know that as soon as I read it to all my kids, it's going to be like a thing, like an inside thing that we say. And I love your illustration. It feels... The thing I didn't say that I want to say to you now is that it feels like it's animated. It feels like there's stuff jumping out at us. It feels like a cartoon that I'm watching. And that's the just right illustration. You were the just right person for this manuscript, at least. So I'm glad you are the one that they asked to do it.
Gosh, thank you. Especially considering who else illustrates Max's stories. Thank you. That's really, really sweet.
You know what? Considering all the other people that have illustrated all of Max's other stories, you were the right one for this book, and they were the right ones for those books.
That's true.
And that's the magic of publishing, right? That's sort of the magic there.
It is. It is. It's magic, which is, I mean, we're all about magic today.
No doubt. All right. I'm gonna end. I'm going to give you the last word here. We're going to bring it back to those kids, the kids that you're preparing to see in school visits this year. So, Elise, I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
This kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about how neither one of us is like real big readers. So first you have to tell the kids to like huddle in and not tell anybody this, but tell them that I don't really like reading. And some of the kids will be aghast and some of the kids will be like, yeah, and they'll like pump their fist in the air because they'll get it. Right. And I would say to tell those kids that if you don't love reading, that's okay. Because I think I felt bad when I was younger that I didn't love reading. I could read, but I felt like I should love it. I should want to do it for fun, but I didn't. And I think it was really great when my mom didn't try to like push reading on me all the time, but she would work so hard to find a book that she thought would work for me. So I tell the kids, like, it's okay if you don't love reading, but definitely ask your librarian about the stuff that you do love. And I bet they can find a book that would fit you. If you do find something about a book about what you do love doing, then you get both. You get the reading and you get that thing that you love. So if that makes sense.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Jake Parker joins me to talk about Little Bot and Sparrow, his debut picture book as both author and illustrator. We also get into the history of Inktober and some exciting news about what's coming up for the month-long drawing challenge. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.